today is to do Tosfot and ideally the Shunyavet, the goal of which is also just to open up, right, I'm interested in opening up ways of looking at the Sugya, axes you can take to approach the Sugya, and the beginnings of what the outcomes in terms of Tzav could be. What we're going to do tomorrow and Thursday is try to talk about the concrete ways in which you move from the Sugya to Tzav. Now, yesterday we talked about just the ways of kind of reading the Sugya. Right, today we're going to move more towards the kinds of outcomes and ways in which you can consider how you would frame a halakhic outcome of the sugya. And then tomorrow and Thursday we're going to talk about the concrete ways in which specific readings of the sugya might generate concrete halakhic outcomes and what kind of choices you have to make that way. And I'm hoping that that by the end of the week we'll be through the we'll be through everything we need to know about the sugya per se, and that will allow us to spend a couple of days reading Tshuvot from the medieval to the contemporary to try and take the I think I call the rule-based halakha that emerges from the sugya and transform it into case-based halakha. And that's probably going to be at the core of the formal halakhic arguments we're going to make this summer, because again, at the end of that let's say, because take us through next Tuesday, we already have had 9 of the 16 formal shurim we have. So that leaves me only 7 shurim to cover a bunch of other topics. So this is right. So this is the sugya that the shadow will have to be built around, and I'm hoping that will open up lots of ways. I want to be upfront that I'm not going to give you the comprehensive survey. We don't have time to do the comprehensive survey of all the shurim on the sugya. And I'm actually even excerpting some of the Rishonim, so when it comes time to write, with your own things, you might want to go back and look at all of them in context. But it struck me as, I think that the way I'm presenting them will be a useful way of thinking about them and looking at them, and then you can select which ones you go back and read, or if you have the skill, you can read all 28 of them, whatever it may be. Very pretty to just recognize all of them, or as long as possible. But it takes a while to actually want to read them thoroughly. So I'm trying to save you a little bit of time. Okay. So we're looking at a Tosfot in Yuma, which wanted to be off the dot. It says interesting things. This is a Tosfot, right, although if it is presented as a comment on the Gemara, really, at least the significant part of it is the Tshuva. To be aware that this was not written as part of the commentary on the Gemara. This is somebody taking material from somewhere else and integrating it into a commentary on the Gemara. We have many different versions of the Tshuva. The Tosfot are a conglomerate. That's how the Alternative is upright. So everybody has some version or another. It's a particular scholarly art to try and figure out which is the original or not, because all of them get copied so many times into a fairly other version, but you can't do it, for example, by saying one which is in first person is earlier than the one which is in third person, because that's not at all reliable. So you just, this is a version of the Tshuva. Could do that too. I'm not taking a position about that. We already answered that question. You have to look at every extant version of the Tshuva and take your best guess as to which of the original is your
gone.
We have other collections of Tosfot. We have halacha collections. And basically any medieval work that deals with this issue, at some point or another, will quote a version of the Tshuva. And you have to study all the variants to figure out which one. It's one of the two famous Tshuvas. There's this Tshuva, about the Mitzrayim Machzoros, and there's another one about a Sholem Kolomon that had some kind of lions around it. And those were actually generated in Machlokas between Rabbi Ephraim and Rabbi Eliakim. And basically those are the two Tshuvas that everyone quotes, but they quote them in different versions and they use different names. I'm not seeking here to, it's not my field, and I'm not trying, it's not sure how valuable it's obviously, it's your own thing to set out with an investigation to determine the original text of that Shiva. Right? That's a specialized skill. That's just all that you showed us that could be done badly. I don't know if you ever thought of that too well. At least not in here. They did show us it can be done really badly. No, actually, I think he thought that what was published as the Shud Rashi was kind of the model for how it could be done really thoroughly and yet almost always an error. So that was interesting. But you know, a number of examples where he would take you through what scholars have published. As the thing is, they made this mistake, they assumed that this would make the original text, but really, really this isn't original, and they thought this was part of it, and this is really not part of it. And you can do it badly, and I didn't try to do it for you. Right? I'm in the classic Yeshiva mold here, where it didn't test the account. Okay. So, let's see. I didn't read much yesterday. Everyone heard this today? Hey, all right, they're volunteers. Start reading this episode. If you read this episode, you probably won't get called on Thursday Shade Heaven. All right, Emily, you can go back. You got your head up first. Okay, so what do you think we're talking about?
I'm talking about illustrations and
masters,
like
good. What's a master? Yeah, and what kind of books? Like, what kind of writing is that?
Hebrew.
Hebrew, right. What font?
It's handwritten.
Okay, that's right, it's medieval. We're done with illuminated manuscripts. Okay, are the pictures flat?
Yeah.
You think the pictures are flat? Okay, that holds up.
Right.
We don't know, right? Because they're very careful, right? They're mitzayer.
The pages themselves have embossing?
No, or sometimes
Okay, so we'll have to see. I think there's certainly some of the versions of Shuba assume that the pictures have a third dimension. Okay, so there are also Shemitari Maslurin Tiros Hayotil. So okay, so you have what the pictures are. The pictures are of animals and birds. The question is framed very nicely in the Osim Law. The person did not give it us a remote there. I don't think it could be that this was misunderstood. It was really a question for a review, and I got a Shuba. But then the question seems to be generic. It wasn't those known people, right, who draw pictures, right, what do you think of their pictures? But it was taken as a lucky question, right? So even if this was a tragic error, I think we're stuck with it. Okay, go on. Okay, so we have, this is unrelated to the pictures per se, this is just the question of whether art is, right, it's useful to have art in front of you during dubbing. You should also be careful, by the way, because people... could also be, right? Sort of hello, right? Could also be people write that if there were pictures of burning bushes, it would be great, but it's pictures of animals and birds, and they don't make you...
We have a Midrash
that
says, right, when
you're
with the
Hashem Hoshed, right, that's true, right? Or Moshe holding his hands up like this, right? So it could just be an image, right? And it could be the mausoleum as opposed to the walls of the shul is also possible, right? I have to figure out how a mausoleum was used anyway. Because right, these individual mausoleums, individual mausoleums are kind of rare, I imagine. So what this means, I don't know what the social context of it means. I want to just go back and point out, by the way, that of course you always have to be careful that the she'elot and she'elot and tshuvot are generally well, sometimes they're just made up. It's famous for Shimon Tadesh, and you just make up the question so that you can answer it. You just write your book as a question and response. But more often, the question is a restatement. So, right, and you can often, right, one of the most important things you can have, you'll learn this to sit in committee, is that if you can frame the question, that's actually more important than the info to the answer. So maybe they asked it about Shimon, and he framed it as yes, they will seem a lot, because he wanted to put in this point about and if you want to put this point about davening, which is not the question they asked at all. Okay, so it's not a good idea, but that's not a ritual. Move on.
Can you do eight times for a little fire call as
Okay, so let's watch the, what's the relevance of Rabbi Gamliel? Now that rolls in here.
So, you have to say it's not relevant here.
It is saying it's relevant here, right? It says, I don't ask again, right? So what's his argument? Right? It says, don't worry, right? Don't cry. It's not a good idea, but there's no issue. So tell us if that's what we do after we're on the wheel, get out of it.
So that's not the piece of it that's going to be up there.
So why is it up there? Right? It was a question about those who draw the pictures. Wasn't it?
Okay, but there's not
something
that
you think was out there. Aha, so we've shifted. Right, for answering the question, is it good to make these pictures, to are you allowed to keep these pictures? Now, well, when we said others made it from the wheel, does that mean other Jews? Or does it mean non-Jews? Most Rishonim think that means non-Jews, right? Which means that this is another stretch, right? That we're claiming that even though these not learned, presumably are made, I'm presuming that the pictures are made by Jewish artists, and therefore, it should be up to commission it if this is really a violation of the Tzelechot Tzelechot. But you're still allowed to keep it. If that's really the case, this is a huge Kiddush.
Yeah.
So you could do that. You can make the claim that you can make it for somebody else, and somebody else can have it if you made it for them. Right? That's a big fetish. The claim that it's an object which it is only forbidden to make for yourself, but two people can make it for each other. Right? That's a big fetish. It's perfect. It's a reasonable, logical alternative. But I'd be interested in finding somebody who actually said it explicitly. Okay, so we have a problem with this though, because it seems right, I would say, because the move to Acher Masulo seems to be a move from the question of whether it's a good idea to make these pictures or even to commission these pictures. So the question of, if you find such an officer, can you keep it? I have to figure out how he got made to be.
Well, it's the same thing if you buy it.
Pardon? Could be. Yeah. Okay. And we say that, the Gemara says that Rabbi Gamliel, it's not enough if other people make it because there's still a possibility of chashad. And the answer he gives is that the chashad, we actually have three kinds of pictures. We have pictures that are belayt, we have pictures that are shokeah, and we have pictures that are flat. And so these, here he says, it seems to me that these pictures are purely flat. Alright, so this version of the tshuva assumes that the pictures are flat, and he says the chashad likely applies to pictures that are belayt, might apply the picture to Rosh Hashanah. Nobody thinks that they apply the picture to Rosh. Okay, now, the question is, right, if we're talking about Chashad, Chashad is presumably a sociological category. Do people, will people suspect you or not? So this is, should be irritable, right? Depends on what people bow down to. If people only bow down to things that are void. So this is an interesting question in terms of halakha. So, how do we view halakhot about chashad, which were formalized by the Gemara? So you always have the choice of claim, you have two choices. You can claim that the halakha of chashad is a halakha that Chazal opted these things because in their time they led to chashad, and therefore we cannot be mocked the things they offered, and we cannot offer the things they were not there. So even if it turned out, let's say, that Chazal said that because of chashad, you're not allowed to keep a picture of a dragon in your house. But in our time, nobody bows down to dragons or pictures of dragons. But we have to know the whole religion built down, built around bowing down to pictures of unicorns. So what? Chazal never offered unicorns because of chashad. And because I'll offer dragons, right? So we could, so we have the choice always of trying to, we can go by what I call the spirit of the law and say that it's Aser Mishum Chashad to keep any picture in your house that people sometimes bow down to. Or we can claim that it's Aser to keep in your house any picture that was bowed down to in the time of Chazal. Yes?
I have to go back to the point you said before about the
Yeah.
So, I just don't understand why it can't be that you don't have the reason that this situation is included on the dish or goes up on the puzzle because you didn't make it yourself.
Right. I know the Jew made it. So isn't that the favor if you commission it? And if the reason for the Yisra was a Avodah Zarah, and then, you know, so it should be Yisra not enough to start with.
The
other Jews made it? Hard to figure out why that should be a consideration. If it was also for them to make. It's possible, right? But it's hard. Well, the picture, the question was about those people who make the pictures.
So what?
So we didn't know where the third party came in, right? The question was, is it a...
You're really answering the question about people who are using the pictures, and you clearly assuming that someone did the picture.
Are you assuming that you're doing the picture? I don't know. I don't know. It sounds like, again, the picture sounded like it was about the maker, and it could be that all of a sudden shifting and saying, well, you know what? Of course, you could be saying, like, of course Jews shouldn't make those pictures. But if non-Jews made them, you can keep them, right? But really could be saying that. So what he actually says is, "Ein kan itchad l'osasa l'chatesel," and then he moves in, why is it an itchad l'osasa l'chatesel? Because after all, it said on the real, the other two made it for him. So that's an non-sequitur. Now we have to try to figure out. It probably, you know, may mean that we have it all, that this version of the Shiva stopped making sense some time ago. And that's possible. Right? And then we'll go look at another reason for the children and say, oh, of course it wasn't supposed to be that. And this one, the editing is supposed to be not sacred. And the editing is supposed to be acceptable. We'll probably give you a list of cases where I was supposed to be on the dock where it just makes no sense whatsoever. And you have to, put other places. And I need to. But I would just tell you that it's not a good idea if you like really understanding things to learn the Festival of the Daf in the first paragraph of Bezlet. Just not. A better idea to learn to agree with her. It doesn't mean it can even, it's a massive job. It's a massive job. But don't assume that the editing is supposed to be saying, even if you didn't assume that it's not shot, don't assume that that's it. Okay. So then we have this claim, right, so
He doesn't mention Rabin, that
there would
be
Rabin. That's true, he doesn't mention Rabin. He doesn't mention it at all. He doesn't talk about whether the pictures are complete or not. Right. Compared to L'Tasa L'Chatesel, the only thing he addressed to L'Tasa L'Chatesel is other people made it. Right. Then he says, but if others related to this, the Gemara goes on there to say that it's the only issue of Chashad. And then you're right, he doesn't talk about Rabin. He takes the approach, which is a reasonable reading of the Gemara there, that Chashat cannot possibly apply to things that are flat. But again, be aware, that's a sociolog, right? That's to prove that Chashat can apply to things that are flat based on the Gemara requires you to assume one of two things. Either that Allah is frozen or that society is frozen. That's because maybe in our society people do worship these things. Right? If you have one of those two things, you have to either assume no change in society and no change in... And part of the challenge is that Halakha is international. Right? It runs across many different cultures. And so if you want to try and have a fixed Halakha, you're going to end up saying something that isn't true in some place. And that's part of the challenge in our society about Makamash over there. Right? What do you do if you get a Shaila from India in America? Or a child from America in India, and they ask you, a question about whether you can, whether a particular kind of image. And it might be, if you judge it based on your American experience, you might say nobody bows down to that. But if you're in India, everyone bows down to that. Right? So if you believe there's a value in having a standard halakha, then you run into this problem. No way to do it really free halakha. So otherwise there's no way to deal with it across cultures. Okay. Right, so he says there's no right. So he makes this assertion: the chashad about animals only applies to pictures that have some kind of three-dimensional aspect to them. Although we should be clear, we talked about Belit as opposed to Shokea. It's not really the third dimension has no artistic substance to it at all. The third dimension, let's look at, I draw a picture of a lion, okay? I take this picture of a lion, I put it on a thick piece of wood. Now I carve the picture of the lion into the wood. Right, the third dimension has no artistic substance to it at all. Because the lion, right, it doesn't give the lion any more, right, because the things, the layers that are deeper are exactly the same as the front. And that's what we're talking about, the ten beliefs. It doesn't sound like we're talking about a picture which makes the third dimension realistic. Or the Tam Shokea. We're just talking about thickening a two-dimensional picture. Right? That's a very interesting notion why that should make a difference. Right? So really, in terms of the realism of the... Because that's what Chotem, right? That's what Chotem is, I think. Chotem is just late. I think. Right? Now, I'm opening a possibility. You might want to reinterpret the Gemara and say that Belit HaShokea really means three-dimensional image and not image that has three dimensions. But I think it's... Right? Do you understand the difference?
What
is Belit from? Here.
Belit from the page. I'm not writing the other way. It was interpreted Belit as being like an actual 3D sculpture.
No, I'm just picturing the same kind of thing, but like, let's say it has rounded edges or something else, or...
Right, so it doesn't go all the way to the back of the lion, right? But we cut away some of the back, so the third dimension has meaning.
Okay.
Right, as opposed to this, where I could draw my lion, and I'm not going to try to draw a lion, right? Well, let's take a minute, okay? Right, so here is a picture of a Noah. And then I happen to wonder later, right? So now I take this picture of Noah, I mount it on a 500 highest, thickest piece of fabric. Well, no, just carve it out. It's the same all the way down. No, it doesn't make much difference. But if we're a lion, the lions aren't supposed to be 500 feet. They change. Right? Lions are supposed to be cut away. Right? You know, they rise to a point, right? You know, on the back, all sorts of things like that. So I don't know, I'm not sure what significance the later Shukri have other than a sociological claim about the time of Chazal, that for some reason people thought those images were bowing down to others. I don't know why it would matter otherwise. Yes, Peter?
It has to do with permanence.
I know you put more time into carving a line out of a bar of soap than you do the painting and the delicate pointillistic thing.
Well, permanence is definitely more permanent than painting.
What?
You could.
Well, also, next time, Could it be? I don't know. Basically, you know, we got these cave paintings, the oldest thing in the world.
Sculptures are more real, though.
and more real. Well, great, how's that culture? I'll talk about culture. Talking about keychains. I have a bottle opener. Which is just a lion with, it's just the image and then just kind of a metal, that's all. A little bit thicker, that's all. Yes, Emma.
It could be that they're putting it in the realm of being three-dimensional, even if it's not like, if you take like a picture of a lion that's just clean on paper versus what you're talking about, maybe that will be the biggest difference in the world for whether or not you're going to bow down to it, but once you're in the realm of three dimensions, then like that's already more of the realm of what people like associated with, like a motive art thing. So even if that's like as far removed as possible, you could get from the reality, like that's already in the...
Okay, so you just draw the line somewhere differently. They have to draw the line somewhere. Right? So they decided to draw the line at anything with three dimensions. We didn't want to have to be in the position of investigating the expression artistry of the third dimension. That's possible. The question then is whether there's any meaning for us nowadays. Because nowadays, is it really the case that whatever religion raises is that in fact our down images distinguish between images that are believed or shakea and images that are painted? We might be more likely to distinguish between originals and lithographs. Between painted and printed, right? Now that would be lithographs because anybody can make a print, but it takes talent and effort to make it. So do I just figure out when we set these as precedents? So do we wish to set them as mechanical precedents, where that is all the law that is, that there is no issue of kashan by things which are not believed. Let's say I get a painting by a prominent medieval Christian painter, of a Madonna child or a crucifixion. And I happen to know, that this is exactly like the picture this person has hanging in Cathedral so-and-so, which people bow down to 50 times a day. So what, it's flat. Nobody's going to think that I entered my house to go and bow down to it. Right, we could do that, but there's a... There's a limit at which there's a point at which we might stop saying that realistically. And yet, for precedent, this is really good, right? Because if we just have no issue of chashad, then we get rid of the vast. We have now, in principle, the not there by anything you want. All right, call it Christian art. Go ahead. Nobody's going to suspect you of anything. Yes?
So just to clarify, this point is so familiar, the one in the
Hashtag,
the
Kohen Bolde. Yeah.
Right? Is that from the
Gemara that he says the Nundalit? Yeah. That's probably, I don't know what Nundalit. Because it's just...
It
says the Hashtag,
but that wasn't just because of Bolde, it was because of Bolde, it was because of other things.
And he has a story of Yehuda, no? No, it says that there's a place that was...
Oh, no, it's Yehuda, right?
Yeah. I think it's just playing a Gemara. He says, even if you think that Shokea is just believing the other direction, right, it's a flat, certainly. And we're going to discover there's an ambiguity in it, right? If you use Shokea as the answer to believe, it can mean either sunk, or it can mean, or it can mean flat. So that ambiguity generates different positions halakhically. They're trying to figure what Shokea meant. Well, the Shokan meant the inverse, the Shokan just meant not speaking out. We already think that they think it's empirical. People bow down to the images that are believed, they don't bow down to images that are not believed. But as I say, that doesn't seem, that seems to have been an artifact of a particular time. I'm not aware of any religion that makes that distinction now, although I'll be happy if some of you are better experts on what it is than I do. Right, if you want to tell me that, I confess that my knowledge of what it is extremely... limited, especially practical limited there. Very, very limited experience. So we'll talk about London Auto, maybe it's essential.
Just from what comes to mind, it does have a good point in general that at least if the Gemara is working with the assumption that the more realistic, three-dimensional the object that they're worshiping, the more, believable it is that it can be worshipped. And, that sort of makes sense even today that, if you believe that Catholicism is a little better, whatever, it's normal, whatever, but they have real idols in their churches or voodoo, they have...
Well, they also have pictures.
But then most of them don't want just the pictures.
I don't know.
Okay,
thanks. I don't know. What do you think of the photos of the Wall of Trevi, too?
Even the people who I think worship the Wall of Trevi, I don't think worship the pictures. So.
I don't know.
People worship the Wall of Trevi. Oh,
maybe
they won't tell you, but...
And some people have an instinctive reaction when you see these photos everywhere. There must be something a little bit outrageous going on.
Yeah.
You know, and some people say that UNS Arroyo is America. UNS Arroyo is America, I suppose the thing is that's why you have pictures. And then I think others of us, and it's just secular influence, keep thinking Big Brother. Because they were in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just what you the NBI is probably everywhere.
I mean, I like your
stuff. I mean,
I've gone in single mothers. Different houses that have huge pictures of the Billy Joe or of the Hottest Science or of Albert Einstein or of
I think it's the omnipresence that.
Right.
I think it's the omnipresence that makes it. I mean, I feel a little uncomfortable. I had this having a Garfunkel book to hang, and I started to touch on that. It seemed a little too.
I don't know.
Onward. Okay. So the Lee. Now we don't know who this Lee is anymore. Or not.
It's the first person there. It's the editor of Postal.
Could be. We don't know. Well, it's not that it's...
It's all I'm saying.
Well, no, because it could be the introducing, right? Because the editor of Postal is saying, and then someone puts it in there. We don't know. But we really don't know what
this is. This was the true law, and now I'm going to give you the moment.
Right, or it could be this was the truth, and here's something else. We know very little about the editing. Reading a particular text, but it is always unwise to assume that, you know, at any point, whether there's a consecutive speaker. We're just about to test of our constructed objects that, we don't know. Somebody who seems to belong to the Toast School said, furthermore, the feeling is still Mutulus Tertullus. Now this is Tertullus. So this person sounds like he's really answering the original Shiloh. And even the Jew can do these things in the name of various kinds of colors. The aim of the mission will tell us the apostle. They will ask our Ella Tarsus Gomer Kofuk de Sheshar of the Mine Sa'im Mutar. Okay, this note, this comment was I didn't intend to present to you with the original, with my, when I started first reading it, but at this point I'm pretty convinced that it is not marble. But I don't know what this vermilion is. There seems to have been some kind of coloring that had enough thickness to make people consider the possibility that it wasn't flat. So it's hakuk. And hakuk is not a word used for painting. So you can do things with colors, but you're not always just going to sell a pencil because was that Tanaka Pesel bans a Tartsuf Gamur, which is Kokuk de Sheshar. Okay, our problem is we don't know what the standard of Kokuk de Sheshar is, and we don't know what a Tartsuf Gamur is. So I just introduced the idea, which for the life of me, I can't understand why, I don't think there is any Rishon who brings this issue up and drives me out of my mind. Which is defining whether a Tartsuf is Gamur or not seems to be defined entirely by whether every element is directly represented rather than by whether you perceive this as whole. And that just kind of just probably would frustrate me.
Every element is
represented. In other words, the question is,
and
we don't distinguish, right? So if I draw a profile, it's not up there. It's a picture of the whole face as it appears from the side. Right? Now if I draw a face, I'm missing the back of the head. Right? It's impossible in a two-dimensional object right, to directly portray all three dimensions.
Cubism.
Right, you can try cubism, right, which I create, but cubism is a function limitation medium. So the notion that you could draw anything Gamor, right, I guess you could draw a whole space, if you try to represent solely on the surface of the face. But if I do the surface of the face without depth, anyone think that, right, that's really what's up there? I draw your face as if it had no depth. Right, so how do I draw a nose? Yes, right, so the whole point is, right, so all, right, so the whole point of a picture is an illusion. And it requires your mind to construct the image. The image isn't on the canvas. So the notion that we judge that the sun is complete by whether I left out one of your eyebrow hairs, right, as opposed to, right, as, right, by whether the, whether, if, whether the one-to-one correspondence, or however we figure it out, between your face and the object on the canvas, as opposed to by whether I actually draw it, right, actually creates the image in you.
Right?
Yeah, or even, at least you can say, okay, we go by rules. Right, but to me, a profile is a perceived number.
Right.
A frontal, a badly drawn frontal face portrait is not. But nobody else seems to care about that. They didn't care about whether you actually have every, right, every anatomical element directly portrayed. No, it's a painting, right? We're talking about Partus Gamur. Right? So if, right, so Partus,
so you don't care about art.
So Moshe Dayan, right? I paint Moshe Dayan. With his eye patch.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a Partus Gamur or not? You can't see one of the eyes.
Oh, so he's
retired,
so yes.
Wait, right?
He's recognized.
You can't see what's not there.
But he's recognizable. I made it like this, too. I just made it in profile. You can recognize that.
Wait, what's that?
There is no kind of time. It can't be. We don't care about that. Partus Gamur apparently means
the front. Wait, so when you say every anatomical thing, you're talking about everything in the front.
Apparently, that's what a partus is. I don't know if you can't have a two-dimensional. I don't know. The whole thing makes no sense to me. And if I, what if I draw a face slightly in shadow, so the eye, right, so the eye that's facing away from you is not really quite visible. Is that up there? What if it turns out it's a trick, right, and it looks like an eye if you look really, really closely at the frog?
Oh, wait, wait, the old lady, young lady thing?
Well, you figure ground, right, figure ground, they should open. I have to say that, so this to me, the whole trick, the whole discussion takes place in a universe where the art doesn't exist.
But they didn't have perspective.
They didn't have perspective. Before they had perspective, all they could do was flat.
But they didn't have perspective. No, I mean, they didn't, like, in fact, they didn't remember how to use perspective until they're young.
Yes.
So they didn't have depth and stuff.
That really
bad art.
That's an interesting line.
Art that did not use perspective.
Right?
And really art that did not use perspective.
That's an interesting line.
I
mean,
they just have these, like, big halos.
Right, this is where we're going to get to the, you know, the question, like, when somebody decides, as the Shodamas does, that the standard is new upon models and painting, right, so they help test off the Sharava, right, so my friend Shava was coming to speak to you Thursday. Right, so one of the paintings she did, which one of her first and big paintings, literally, was a 9-foot painting with a jugger girl. Which she did to try and, it was a 9-foot painting experience of wearing a really long skirt. So it's a 3 different catalogs, you have to hold it, right? But now, set up for your hair, right? Now, right, let's not even 100 for women, right? So what's the standard? Right, little fingers, because... Right, because that's how big the picture is. So, right, so what does it mean, right? So, what is that, right? What is that? What happens if you draw a portrait which is slightly disproportional, right? So how do you measure the step up?
Oh, so then you can just turn all pictures that you make.
That's right.
That
is perfectly with her. It's perfectly with her, right? Because you can never, as long as you put a little, you know, a little cap on the finger to avoid the epistemic problem. Right, so that, right, so. To me, one of the gaps, just the whole gap in this conversation, is that this conversation is that...
They didn't have a comprehensive education with art and music.
I don't get it. I don't even...
What's your American public
school? I don't know about that. You know, I don't...
That's the generation where they had art music.
Yeah.
Kind of But I just don't get the whole conversation. I just don't get the whole conversation. It seems not to be talking about. It seems to me that if the artists were in the conversation, they would have been baffled by what we were talking about. And any way you can get past that is fine with me. So I just don't. I don't know. Maybe this is the best way to do it. Maybe you just can't get into it because it'll get too complicated. And then you're going to start having fun writing the child. What happens if you have a 3D paint? What if it's a 3D painting? What about paintings? One of my friends in Cambridge, I was told yesterday that all his paintings are done by, they're textured oil paintings. So that there is a third dimension to the amazing explanation. It's the kind of painting where you just sort of carve the colors out of the, right? You put paint on with a knife and you cut it off to create, so these are, I have a painting on the second floor, which is one of the reasons I bought it, it's not just painted, but the depth of the paint actually makes a difference in how you perceive it. Right, so mountains are craggy. I just find it very hard to figure out what these children are doing. Then we have a tangent, which tells us, for our purposes, what the allegation is, it proves that drawing pictures is viable, and we discover that Rav too was a frustrated cartoonist, apparently. In order to make something his, he would draw pictures of Chaya and Oso on the cafeteria. Good to know. If you figure out for yourself that this is something that works to you or not, certainly next time you do it, we'll share. So I'm not doodling. What I'm doing is recreating the Kenny and Rob. $1,000,000. Okay. That is only the same Gemara quoted earlier. Right, some people shut a lot down. $1,000,000. Fine. Okay, so now we have a potential attack on this. Potential attack on this is the Mechilta that we began with, right, which is the Galufa and the Atuma issue. Right, so this is a move that we haven't seen previously, because the Gemara doesn't quote this Mechilta. Right, but here we have a Rishon who is aware of this Mechilta and feels that the conversation is not complete. If you have the Gemara, we don't have the Midrash Halacha. That's obvious. You could just say, the Gemara doesn't make it, right? That's an option that is always available, to just reject anything that isn't in the Gemara on the grounds that it didn't make the Gemara. Okay, but he's bothered by it. So in order to get out of that, he has to redefine Galufa as Boletet and Atuma as Shokat. Okay, which is basically, you know what every Galufa or Atuma meant. We have no business disagreeing with him. We did your first shot in Galufa and Atuma. And then he has this really, right? The person involved quoting the Gemara is saying that Shokat, there's no Chashat. That's talking about somebody else makes it. So we can create the claim, right? The question is there a connection between what it's also for you to do and what the Chashat is about? Right? So in order to get this, he gets a new image, right, with Wavia Tabuvia. So Abuvia, he does not think is some kind of amphibious creature, that's what, right, swimming creature. Abuvia, he thinks, is related to Bavoa, which is a shadow. And so you can't even create pictures of the shadows as they appear in water. Right, it's not the things that are in the water. You can't even draw the picture as it appears in water. Now that is a fascinating image. The shadow, does it mean the reflection? Right, that, you might think that the way you can draw things is you can't draw them directly, but you can paint a picture of the water with the reflection. Right, the early impressionism, maybe only the bottom half of the picture. Right, so you paint the reflection up. That all clear to me what he means. And now he has a drasha. Right, he understands that the drasha was, right, Turas the Muth Bevoa Shemayim. Now, Eli has to be aware, I used to give a shiur which built for the climactic moment, I think, was when there was a blues that talked about something like the eager the Malish Iker Chepta of the Gavra, or something like that. You know, we're just, obviously language had completely broken down. Right, all you were just throwing in phrases and hoping eventually somebody, you know, the very answer to the thing. Here we have the Churas Dibus Bilor. Why not the Telen Tur Dibus Bilor? The Churas Dibus Bilor. You figure out which one you meant. Hank the Ranger. It's your absolute. You go ahead. Go right ahead. Okay. All up to you. Okay. But some people think it's talking about some kind of water demon. Yay. Okay. They have these things in Harry Potter, don't they? Grindelwald, you hack your head. apparently, Grindelwald is known as?
Grindelwald,
yeah. So they're apparently called to Sarzurim. Sarzurim. It's apparently what they are. I don't know. Shuhumin, Shej, Mavayim, Shakurin, other names of Lashon Ashkenaz. All right. Bechol Yoh Ena Turn Matotot Ela Pratutim Chakukim. Alone in Swayim. Okay, right. So the overall claim is that it's not usher to paint pictures pretty much of any living thing. Okay. Fine. Amnon. Al kisei Shlomo nitameh. I am astonished by the throne of Shlomo. This is Vishnayim Aryot Omdim Eto Yadot Vishnayim Asar Arayim, etc. Okay, now we have a totally new thing. Right. The Gemara, when I talked about the Dmus Torah Slavanos of Rav Galil, never talked about Shlomo.
What?
Yeah?
Oh, Shlomo didn't know about
the Gemara. I will leave your speculations in this regard. There's something more to Shlomo.
Okay.
Very much Shlomo, and Shlomo presumably got the Halacha right. That's presumption here.
But Shlomo wasn't very negative
on the revision of the Zohar. That was later. Okay. Because we're still building anything bad. He doesn't worship Moses Zara. Still. Bring in brackets the historical Shlomo. We're going to deal with the ideal Shlomo as he was up until the night before the Beit HaMikdash opened when everything goes wrong. That's a separate matter.
But it doesn't tell about building a palace after celebrating.
He built the palace of Bat Paro at the same time as he built the Beit HaMikdash, and the night before she actually, we should probably do this, the night before she built this incredible fake sky and hangs it over his bed so that he'll oversleep and think he's still asleep when it finds the daughter of the Beit HaMikdash, and so he's late and everybody has to come get him, and all the people that can give him muster enough to be overslept. It was really not his fault because she made this incredible metal fake sky and that fooled him. Yes, whatever. We should do that magic film. It's an incredible magician. Very much so. Okay, so Shlomo, right now we're assuming that Shlomo doesn't do things wrong. And but here's the topic. So one of the jobs of this Tosfot is bringing in all sorts of things, not cross-referencing Gemaras, but it's bringing all sorts of information that wasn't in the Gemara. Right, first we brought in the Filta. Now we're bringing in Sukkim. So the first answer is, right, he says you can't do this. Ve'im Omar Belpia Ibrahama. Okay, you can't say that he just acted Belpia Ibrahama. This is a nice cheap tactic, right? Whenever you find your character is not behaving badly, right, who's a good guy, you just say, well, God told him to. I have to say, the answer to this gift here is really, I don't understand. It can't be Belpia Ibrahama because Ein Nami Rishad of Hanesha Ramayata. Good. He isn't the Chanesh Dover. It was a Rasha. I don't understand the justice at all. I have no idea what he's saying.
Right?
Yes.
It ends up being a
Chair Masuva. A Chair Masuva. Well, he could have tried to hire other people to make it, so he doesn't count for that one also. Yes. But Shlomo didn't worship him in there.
I mean,
Right, then it shouldn't be Mechadesh Devar. It should be that Ein Azarei, Ein Shalom, Navi Lucharei, right? Lunitska, Lunitska, Lunitara, if you want to have a show. So I have to say that this Tosfot is a complete mystery to me. I have no idea what this line meant. The final answer is equal, right? So you can't say Nigra Yamamot, Nigra Milta Shani. So you pulled out the Rosh answer in the end eventually. Nigra Milta. Right? The Shadabah Milta, not Nigra Nigra Milta. Let's talk about, right, why? Because Kishayu was eaten by Imaid, but then the Yor Yor Chor given on the Kiboshi to Midrash, when we talk about like Mitzapan Imaid to Kohayi to check here. Alright, that's wild. Right, that's just wild to claim that, right, we're going to have this by claiming that it was utterly necessary for Shlomo to do this really, really awesome thing, because that was the only way you could keep witnesses from lying. So the whole sentence system everywhere else is collapsed, because we don't have metal lions growling at witnesses anymore, so we pray, so the whole thing.
You can get some help,
right? You could. Witnesses will stop lying. I have my guess. Do they stop people from lying? Lions hide them, I guess.
But the basis of
So here's my play, right?
Maybe
Nigra
Milta doesn't mean
it's
just an exceptional occurrence.
Yeah, but he tells you why.
What?
Nigra Milta is a technical term. It exists in the Gemara. It has to have an immediate socially essential purpose. And he tells me why. It's because of the witnesses.
We know this was an exceptional circumstance because these were really special lines that had like all sorts of special things that they would miraculously do.
Okay, it was a special circumstance.
You think that answer?
I give you that answer. Let's put it this way. He's not going to say that it's mutter to do this. He's not going to say that it's much to do this. If it requires claiming that Shlomo and Dibor made these things the right witnesses, that's better than saying that it's okay to have statues of life. That's where I was talking about the nerd answer, right? So I would write to John Z. Dostoevsky, and this notion of a comedian point, which is the things that people are not going to change no matter what, and they're going to turn everything in light of it. He's not going to say that it's okay to make golden lions. Yeah, right? That's just not okay.
Is he less okay with that than he is with saying that Shlomo wasn't aware that it was wrong?
Yeah. You can't say that Shlomo's not aware of it. That's cheating. Okay. Shlomo knows everything.
Okay.
Also, like this is a base of Mikdash, right? This is an island of everything, right? We're going to claim that he didn't take the Nebuchadnezzar to put a stone in the Eichel. They were just telling the hit all along. Or Shlomo's palace. Everyone who went to Shlomo's palace. The Gemara somewhere should have asked for it. Alright.
Those weren't statues.
Alright, I think that the major thing to learn from this is it doesn't matter how many people did it, it's up there. And that's the bottom line. This is really wrong. I don't care. Anybody, right? If you've got right, if you find your Eliyashiv doing it, he also had it in the blood. I don't care. Like, this is really, really wrong.
No, right.
Don't put them in your shape.
We already know that about other people's problems. But I don't adore
that he has a wrong. Fine. And that's how it is, right? But it's not halakha. It's not halakha. Whatever things it's not halakha, you can't make it go to the lion. Period.
Well, wait. It could be that his name's kind of saying, right?
Everyone knows nobody worships Avodah Zarah in public in biblical times, right? Right. So having your tattoo in public, that's what care. The whole time, nobody ever works with it that way. By the way, also, this is also amusing me because of the other part, the other end of the shot is they break in pieces, right? And one of the directions I always loved when I was a kid was Yoshio's. When Yoshio's inspectors came through to wipe out the Minnesota, right? Right, they always have to stand in Minnesota and divide into them on both sides of the door, but there's these magic eye tricks, right? That you open the doors and it was a full picture you never noticed, and you close the door all of a sudden, it made them Minnesota.
That magazine
thing, but you know, everything's in Toro. So the notion that either Mitzrakim or either take making pieces or Rabim gets rid of the Hashash of Minnesota. What else? I don't know either. Okay, could be. I don't know. Okay, now he says, Umasha, because Lehechel, the country, Kedoshim, Siurim, Chasukim, because Yol Savis, the next Firo, Zimara, Mipo, Beriel, Zimara, Mipo. So now we give up and we say, Yesh Lomar, Alpia Dibur, Hakol Bichtav, right? So this is, Alpia Dibur is the old cartoon, right, in which, you know, you have the physics equation on the board, but then somewhere in the middle it says, and then a miracle occurs.
Is this sort of like the
idea? No. I'm saying, and then a miracle occurs. This is after, we know this is Alaka. We also know they did it. We're not going to criticize them. So we're going to have to say, you know what? God told them they could break the law. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, I understand that it's a bad explanation to say Shlomo didn't know it was wrong, but Shlomo did do other things that were wrong, like marrying Zachariah and having...
Yeah, you can try that.
But you can just say that, yes, he knowingly did it. Bad,
you could try. They're not happy with it. You could try that too. Okay. People don't like something on Shlomo or anything other than Avodah Zarah. No, it's not Avodah Zarah. It's not right. They don't want to think of it. They don't think anyone bowed down to it. Because everyone else is there. Nobody looks like this is an important, cool thing. This is like one of the rewards Shlomo gets. Right? It's hard in context.
Okay.
To say that it's good. Yes, Kathleen.
I'll be a
deeper
here. If the
function
of the human knowledge, there are obviously things in the Hikal that are also outside, like the Hikal, or... it's not so unlikely that, you know, Alpia Dibur is true for the Mega Mega.
It's like the Kruvim.
Right.
All sorts of things are in the Kruvim. Okay. They can do that. So they just bracketed. They just bracketed the whole concept. Except that... The other thing we have something for, and here we have a puppy in the Ray Yamin, right? We're just saying...
It's not necessarily an essential part of the Mitzvah.
Like,
because it's in the
Mitzvah,
you can never make
sure after
that, maybe just because it's a replica of it.
Right? It's a circular argument, right? It says anything that happened in the Beit HaMikdash must have been Mitzvah because God must have said it. Right? And Bailey just says, the Beit HaMikdash is a function that's precedent for nothing. We will assume that everything that happened in the Beit HaMikdash was Mitzvah and halachically irrelevant.
Yeah.
Okay, nice move. Right, nice move. But I just thought this is an argument that is impervious. This is impervious to discussion. And we can do that anything we want. Oh, we get there. Oh, right. But the
do we have second and third grade teachers react when you question them?
In a sense, right? But we can just roll up whatever you want, right? Whatever you want, anything you want. I think the law says next, but someone says the other way. So that was not the ending word. It was a rough shot, right? They could do it, but we couldn't. Right? So, right, this is when you get to those points, you understand that you have somebody that exactly which you can say, so they have no argument, so we can reject it. Or you can say they believed it so strongly they were impervious to arguments, so we have to take it as a given. Right? This is one of their core assumptions. You can give it more authority or less authority because it's not subject to argument. Right? We have to be aware that this is not an attempt to convince you.
Alright.
It's just not up for discussion. That can't be Mutter. He discovers that there's not such a slippery slope. Right, what he really can't deal with is statues. Right, statues are out there. Also, it's not necessarily the same person, by the way. Be careful, right? It could be that one. There's another person someone tells me to say, what? Right, I'll see a deeper. What are you talking about? Right? The anomalies in Tulsa don't mean the same person giving alternate answers. They mean one editor in Tulsa writing all the answers given by the wrong interpreter. Right? So it could just be the first person felt this, and the second person said, no, what's the big deal? And be very careful not to read even one Tulsa as representing one voice in one psychology. This creates interesting issues of what, you know, a lot of it, we have old questions. It's possible for the Tulsa. So does that mean that if you hang the picture on the wall, right, what are Joseph's kids, what do we do with it, right? Mechuber in terms of Shabbat, does it matter what the size is relative to the wall, right? Not to, Tesco and Walter, interesting hockey questions. Fine, but he gets out of it. Okay, and then we have the nice term, Giacomo Gaucho in the Dhamma, so he says, I imagine this is the case, but he's not actually going to be mocked here. So this is really just the way it gets...
Does he say that he's not being mocked here, or just like, it's okay, but I'm not going to do it in my house, but I'm good, it's like being on at school.
No. I think what he feels to master means I wouldn't talk to him this way. I might tell you that you can't criticize them, but if you ask me to shine, like, can I do this, I wouldn't tell you. I mean, that's the way he feels to master. It's not personally I wouldn't act this, I wouldn't... I think... Ultimate in Shavuot means I would talk to that little master. And now I would do this myself. I think. That's my understanding of Ultimate. Maybe I don't talk personally. Then we get to a whole long discussion, which gets back into our core issue. Is Abaye retreats from what he says? Abaye not retreats from what he says? And I'm interested in we get to the underlying section. Right? They say, and Shadi on the wheels of Sena Masolo, the Hashta, the Lokomer Ella, should be Bifo Hana Shinriye, Shami Nazlo Hada Baby Komai de Shadi Meikara. And the other stuff, I mean, just before the underlying section. Okay? Right, so it doesn't say Ella. Right, the Hashem is welcome or Ella of the Kol Hanashinuye. Right, Shmaya will have already called my Deshanan Eker. Right, the whole same discussion whether our buyer's answers replace each other or not. Right, okay, so we say, the conclusion is the Lov, Nisarah, or Kustus, Ella, Lov, Hachamim. So what does that mean?
None
of these
can be directly derived from the Gusha, which just allows
attach whatever they wanted to the Gusha.
Literally can
mean any all. But you can't include them in your
synergetically.
That's right. Alright, so the bottom line says that there is no way in which you can try and construct from love to the Sun Yeti any kind of coherent exegetical, and there's no necessary conceptual unity to what's Asur and what's not. Right? It's just that the Torah said Lotatsumiti, and that meant there's a certain that gave us all the authority to decide which thing for Asur. And they did.
Shabbat.
Yes, right? Shabbat, Yom Kippur, Chol-Moed. That's the great example of Yom Kippur, Chol-Moed. But it's not here that I teach the MLF, you know, the whole discussion. She said, ultimately, all halacha comes down to this. All halacha theorizes that comes down to it, because you can't get to the metrics of halacha. But this is bolder than most, right? Because here the drushes are, here they're trying, everyone's trying to deal with the problem, shokea, belief. It's all not any key. How can there be different rules, how can there be different rules in the Madura Elyon and the Madura Takton and Gaon, right? And so the answer, this is another throw up your hands to this. Right, so in terms of contrary precedence and not, we say Alpia Dibur. And in terms of of incoherence here, we say, so what? The contrary precedence will come in. Now, where that leaves us is...
Why do you think that wasn't
the Masorah? We don't know when the Masorah started. We're just saying that... They're saying it. There was a point at which a group of human beings, and that group of that point may be... At the point of the entrance there to trial, it may be the day after the possible testimony was given, it may have been 1,000 years later. It may have been redone many, many times over history. But at some point prior to the Gemara, a group of duly authorized rabbis meeting in some form, whether they, you know, and again, like the social contract. The social contract is a fiction, right? Nobody believes that all human beings got together and signed a contract, but we treat it as if, right? So, you know, the equivalent of it in Halakhic literature is Haskamat Kol Yisro. And whatever mechanism you use to construct Haskamat Kol Yisro, you can believe that the method of constructing Haskamat Kol Yisro is what we call in Afghanistan now a Loya Jirga, right, which would invite all the representatives and everybody comes together and there's an official meeting. Or you can believe that Haskamat Kol Yisro is, right, is created by having one girl sit in a apartment somewhere and say, it seems to me that everybody agrees to this.
What are you talking about?
So, we say, Lomasarana Kastubel, we're talking about Halakha D'Oraita. We're making a claim that at some point the Halakha D'Oraita was established for all Israel by human beings. It's D'Oraita because it's the official interpretation of Lota Asuniti. But the word nobody claimed that the word Lota Asuniti determined the halakhic outcome. They just gave you discretion. Here's a range of things that you could either declare Usher and Luther, make up your own mind. Now, why didn't you get so tired? We were at it. Sharon had to do this. What did you do with that? All right. Okay, this is right. Well, the title of the book was the title of the coming needs. It means that at some point, the agreement of human needs.
Wait, and so, like, it's... We pretend that we agreed to let that happen.
So however you think the authority for that was derived, right, it wasn't done locally, right? So there has to be some way in which this garnered this became binding all upon Israel. That could be, whatever you think is necessary to create that. Let's say, you know, one extreme model is that the necessary is one person sitting somewhere saying, it seems to be the consensus of the
party.
Yeah. Or it could be that an official representative commission was called.
It doesn't really take one person to say that, it seems to me, but I think it's for everybody else
not to
say that.
And that was
really
all everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not
within.
Well, it doesn't matter to me because right, unless we're trying to look at trying to disprove this person and say, no, not everybody agrees to all do all the directors. Right? Because
that's what happens.
Yeah, interesting question. Interesting question. That's why the Gemara always has these interesting notions like Butler Dice and Michael Goladon. Right? They're crazy, right? They don't count. They're not really part of the... They're marginal. But we have ways of getting rid of exceptional cases.
Very sweet.
Yeah, I do that, right? Sometimes people get, you know, the pretty example the other way is the attempt to revise Mitha in the 16th century, mm-hmm. where they, right, when Arimi Rav, you know, thought everyone had agreed that he was the person to get Mitha, but the Rambach disagreed and thought that he counted it. Are you really? He didn't count. But he did. He won. Right? There's always, you know, there's never an absolute consensus. There's always somebody out there who disagrees. So it doesn't make the assertion that at some point, whoever, the duly authorized representatives of the Masoret sat down and decided, Lota Asuniti would mean human beings, and the right hand parts of female. Well, he's kind of parts of female. Only that.
Is that on everything, or they decided that there's going to be a way to, that there are going to be people that will decide eventually everything?
I don't know.
Wait. They were people that posited themselves in a room for a week, like the Constitutional Convention, and made everything. Or they said, this is going to be the process by which everything will be decided, even if it takes 100 years.
I don't know what those things.
Wait, are you talking about Halakha D'Oraita?
Yes. The Halakha Lota Asuniti. Joseph claimed that at some point in the past, human beings produced the Halakha Lota Asuniti. And they produced it in some case, right? That does give a very interesting claim. The first thing they came up with is, people have to have houses.
What? So
that's the first, this is a core assumption they came in, is that it can't be up there to build a house. Now, a house can happen to everybody coming to us. Uh-oh. It has to be butchered to have stuff. Right? So therefore they decided that Lota Asuniti, as it applies to the Beit HaMikdash, they decided, you know what, we're going to ban houses that are exactly the size of the Beit HaMikdash. Because that was pretty safe. Right? But not everybody uses sun, apparently.
right? But if it isn't, for example, you know, had they thought of it, they probably wouldn't have banned incandescent light. Oh no, round objects. Round objects, they can't wait. Turn images. No, what? No, they didn't do that, right? Good for them, yay. And they were sensible people. Right? So they only banned things in such a way that left other humans that left it possible to live. And this was a pragmatic thing. Some of these things are supposed to be up there for whatever reason, but we don't want to make life unlivable. So anyway, I have to go through a certain set number of routines every year, right? So people only hear them the first time. So the place where I always love talking about, like my favorite time as a kid in heresy of YU, was when I gave this year, and I suggested... No, I think this is always my favorite. This is always my favorite. It was when somebody accused me of heresy for claiming the Holocaust was supposed to work. Because the evidence states the Holocaust clearly didn't. So who they claimed it was supposed to is to attack Holocaust.
So when we talk about
who said that the reason he left on the firm is because otherwise he couldn't eat your waste cooking. And I said that this assertion meant, what, pardon? Well, is it Rashi? I will give which one's Rashi, which one's the Tosafot Rishonim.
Or,
well,
you get, sure.
Okay, so I quoted that, right, and I quoted in the context of a particular high school had put out a slavery in which the Rebbe who didn't share with me, had explained to them that that was not actually a plausible explanation. Then they had to hold it. The reason he held that was because that was really a din how the Echadam and Bitterim work. Because it's not a Torah. Why should the Echadam and Bitterim work? Because people have to eat the rice cooking. And now the Rishon points out. If Torah tells us that you're not supposed to eat the rice cooking, then that would cook.
And that's
not
the person
just to that. Okay, right? But I was accused of Gantura for suggesting that it was a plausible Torah to say that, right, to build halakha on the premise that you have to be able to eat your rice cooking because there are certain set of domestic assumptions. As opposed to, halakha is and halakha is, and we adapt ourselves to it.
That's so interesting.
I accepted
the
same
for the argument.
Yes, so
you could
put it that way. Right, apparently not a... So Joseph here assumes, right, so he says, Joseph here says, right, if we didn't set up a rule that said that we only ban houses that are the dimensions of the Hidmikdash, right, well, you follow that Shulam Adam, let's go buy him a Shulam to Kalim, but he showed you the Hidmikdash, and nobody could make a house, nobody could make a table, nobody could make Kalim. So you might have to answer no. You know what? So we're in a tent, and you have a floor with our fingers. What's the deal? What's the big deal? And that's what all that is. Right? Right, this also is telling you, right? So it doesn't tell me retrospectively that I'm allowed, right? It doesn't tell me, they just tell me the Torah that I should be able to argue, right? Given a choice, we should try and interpret our life in such a way that a lot of people live in houses as opposed to tents, and to eat off tables as opposed to floors, and to use forks. Right? It does sound like there's a bias to halakha in that direction. It doesn't determine it. But the test is that at some point this halakha was determined on the ground of reasonability. And that they sacrifice coherence. In the sense of, let's make the same, all things utter in the same way. Right? They sacrifice that for creating a workable system. Right. So that, I think, is valuable. Right? So Joseph thinks that the issue was constructed in such a way as to allow people to live what he considers to be a normal life. Now you might, on a very extreme ground, say, well, if we have now come to the conclusion that painting is part of what is necessary for a full human existence,
still, and we then assume that Chazal, of course, were aware of all the six such things. Then we might say, you know what, it's not plausible to interpret the halakha in such a way that it bans painting. That I think, as a direct argument, that's fairly, right, that's not so strong, but as an underlying ground of thinking about how you're supposed to think about the halakha, I think it's quite strong. That's the vision of the judge. You know what? As opposed to really being driven by some kind of formal legalism, we understand there's a tension here. On the one hand, right, they have to say Los Atzmonim means that there is supposed to be some kind of restriction on the production of certain kinds of representations. And on the other hand, they understand that there has to be a limit on the banning representation because everything can represent something. And so now he says, now let's work out what they said. But don't be bothered so much about what they said. It doesn't seem to flow from the book. Interesting question. It may bother you greatly. Right? You may think that, what kind of argument is this that just written? You may think this is part and parcel of the kind of thing that's just about PID work. All this is not one of the things that blows you away with the cleverness of its argumentation and the subtlety of the intellectual. This is broad brush halakha, where you get rid of all the evidence by either saying that it's divinely ordained or humanly chosen, and there's no evidence whatsoever you can bring against it. Right? It's not evidence that's unfalsifiable. It's no evidence whatsoever to change your mind about anything. Yes.
Okay, so
Lomax Kiro
has actually
not
allowed
that
on you.
Yeah,
Lomax Kiro. Yeah.
So that, they wouldn't say that it's like, or like, before that was, well, again, it could be that, it doesn't start at Sinai. It doesn't come down from anywhere. Right? What comes down is the text. Right? At what point this decision was made? That is for Tosos the same kind of question as exactly when was the social contract made. Who cares?
But
then,
like,
we'll
sit in
here
every
day before we're about to have that. He got the results there. And the results there, including the results there, this was what's up to me, see? Up to you.
Really? That's so cool!
That's what it is. Yeah. In certain places, we got in detail. And so let's say, you want a guiding parallel. So, God says to Moshe, right, he says to him, throw the stick down and it will turn into a snake, right? And then he says, stick your hand down, right? Tell Aaron to stick his hand over the water, it will turn to blood. But when he gets to our bed, what? No instruction. No instruction to Moshe about what Makadar is going to be.
Well, isn't it
under the
memorial?
Remember what?
No warning.
Yeah, there's no memorial. There's no instruction to Moshe. Moshe comes to Pharaoh. Moshe comes to Pharaoh, and with no prior conversation, he says, guess what? The Pharaoh is going to be our guest. The Pharaoh is going to be the idea of our baby Bulaka. So where do you get this from? So one the chat, maybe that's what I think it is, right, says, of course God told Moshe, but if that's all to me, we skipped it. Right? Because sometimes the Chumash bothers to tell us God saying it to Moshe and Moshe repeating it, and sometimes it's just supposed to figure it out. Then the drastic explanation, is that there were initials on the Maseh. Right? And Moshe's trying to say, Aleph, what begins with Aleph? That's what happened to you. He didn't think of on your own. So another thing is that God said to Moshe, think about that. I came with a script, so now it's your turn. And Moshe said, when he went to the plague one, at the Canis plague step one, not just kidding.
They can't tell you.
And we don't know which one it is. But that's the model, right? So we're in the third chase now. We're nothing at which reason says. So that's what it was. Mitzarek is in the Chachamim. Or even if the water says it's on, right? So
alcohol.
Everywhere.
Every halakha ends up, every halakha at some point, every halakha d'oraisa will hit a shape where precedent isn't controlling. And then you have to make up your own mind. But often you can't.
You decided it was before.
So here, at that level, right? But now we have a whole set of new cases.
So, okay, so it was asked before, but then it doesn't apply to us.
It does apply to us, but it's like even when we determine what they expect, they'll be saved, it will happen again. Then there'll be a case.
Yeah, wait, what happens now?
What happens now is we make up our own mind.
So
we make
up
within the parameters. They have to deal with our, if it hadn't been looked up 20 feet, they wouldn't have offered any of them.
So
well, that's in the case that you can give the grant of authorization to offer certain things. Maybe if you have a mandate that they have to offer at least one thing.
Okay.
And they make choices.
Okay.
And those choices are, those choices cover a lot of ground. But not all ground. Like, when a new case comes up, let's say, the example is holograms.
Probably they never discussed the question of whether it's up to them to make a hologram. Like holograms, right? So they build from Torah the holodeck fund. They had a enterprise Star Trek Next Generation. Holodecks are sort of artificial, temporary existence. Right? So you sort of live in this tangible illusion of stuff. So we always
just...
Well, the matrix is all psychological. Now, this is real, it's not in your head. It's real. It's just a.
It's all real, but it's somehow tentative. Science fiction, right? But we always heard that the foreign pieces are right. Coming from Tesla.
Wait, is it like a movie requiring Harry Potter?
Yes.
Okay.
It's very much. Except, magic and science are very different things. I wouldn't want to.
But it has the same function.
Yes, it has the same function, but it's not clear the mechanism is the same. Sure, like the holodeck can't be multiple things. Well, I think we have multiple things simultaneously. Interesting question. Maybe. There's a paper there.
Very fine,
but still. Okay. Same behavior. So we actually cook most of the hollows, whereas you have to throw the condes. There are all sorts of issues like that come up. And if you're pleased to write these important, you might run it seriously someday, because after everything,
The whole has implications with the extraterrestrial.
Already written, told you. Yeah, but...
Right.
Right. Right. That is a great job. It's like one of the things that most monsters reminds me of FD Curious. Nobody will ever... You gotta read it, because... Actually, I say nobody will ever write about that again, because he wrote about it, and it sounded intelligent, and everybody knows the author's so low, that all anybody who does react to that again is, go read something that way. Not worth the risk. It's so unlikely that you're going to sound intelligent. And he really did. He really did. It's a really cool accomplishment. Okay. Alright, so all these new technologies, all these new things, we are presumably in the position of Mr. Anakasa coming. We just don't know. Now, we can choose to decide that we will not exercise discretion. We'll just do our best to extend the rays of mechanical precedent as opposed to the rays of conceptual precedent. And it's not likely, let's say, the distinction they made between three-dimensional, I guess they banned houses of only that size. I guess we'll be in trouble if it turns out that the only houses that exist in the world are exactly the size that they can exist. That's not such, that was a pretty good discretionary move if they wanted to make sure houses were created. So the hair must be low planet, and they also do, right? No, but that was the point, they chose that, right?
You
put that, so probably this is not something that in those terms, the issue, right, the way it relates to us directly is,
one of the tensions that is going on right now is that there are people who claim that the capacity for free artistic expression is intrinsic to the living life. And they will make the claim that therefore you have to interpret the halakha in such a way that commits to that. Now, the counterargument is, hey, we've been about it for 1,000 years. How can you claim it's necessary? And the counterargument to that is Zionism. Right?
people claim that, you know what, you can live in any light of existence without art. Because any light of existence is not, right, never, does not require creating a complete culture. No. But how is it necessary? But we can't, you know, we sacrifice art because we knew that we were living. Right? Because of intent, we're living past. Now, funny, one of the real conversations of these articles going on now about the top of art is the claim that while you were in exile, you made a conscious decision to be Pharisaic. You were not trying to create an independent whole culture. You were creating a culture that basically existed as a subculture and had no need for art because you were recognizing you were not able to. And now we have the same Israel, right? When you have a state... Well, if you think that, you could try that. Right? You could try that. You could try that if you wanted. Right, so it's one of these, you know,
Right, and it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if you find moderns making that claim. Apple Pisha Tosu Kirsukata, right? That's right. That's this Tosu doesn't. Other Tosu, right? But I want you to recognize that there is this kind of argument to make, and you have to decide to what extent, right? What I want to get is that the question of whether art is essential to human flourishing is a halakhic question. Because if art is essential to human flourishing, then it's plausible to argue that the halakha has to allow for it. But it is not. Yes. Right. It's a direct. In Tosfos, the Tosfos believes that at one point in history it had an absolutely direct halakhic ramification. Right. That the question should this be us or not was answered on the basis of is it necessary human flourishing or not. Nowadays it might not be that direct, or it might be. I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's not the goal. If you also have the fact that
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not just going to be
essential that that's not. If it's essential, we will design the halakha so that it's mutter. There are lots of ways to design this mutter. We could, we chose to offer the mutter and still allow building houses by dimensions. We could have said you can build a house out of anything that doesn't use the following, it doesn't use all of the following materials. That would be like list all the time, body head that is. We could argue that you could build it only if you leave a little patch undone, which is the way we handle certain other halakhot. So just to leave one patch undone, so it's really not like the Bnei Gash. We could say that you can build houses so long as they're not in the Bnei Gash, in that they don't have curtains in them anywhere.
But I mean, the point is that he isn't just saying that even Tim Hospital just because it would
have value. Right.
Because
they're going to allow him to go out for it. He has that many other
reasons why that would go
there. Which is?
Which is that they can't
make a
differentiation between things that you know what they look like and you don't.
That's right. That's a reasonable way of doing it, right? It's all reasonable. That's all reasonable, right? They didn't finna die.
There was no reasonable explanation. I mean,
is there a reason to assume he would have still... maybe. I think they had discussion. They weren't going to ban people living in houses.
Because
you have to justify your discretion. You have to figure out why, right, why this as opposed to others. So it happens that...
Discretion
is not arbitrary. It's just not determined by the text. As I learned, it's not arbitrary, but the text didn't tell you what to do. You have to figure out whatever, a whole set of external factors, practicality, right, moral, whatever it may be, came into determining what is it possible for this pasuk to mean, halakhically. But understanding the pasuk perfectly the way God intended it doesn't help you any. Okay?
you think about that first.
Okay, that brings us to the Shailas. Yeah, you should all have some idea of who the academic was and what kind of interesting life he lived. I'm not going to tell you about everything else. He was a very, very interesting human being. And now we have an autobiography, too. And we actually have to publish the autobiography. It's very rabbinic. Did he publish it in Hebrew in the end, right?
He definitely published it.
He published in Hebrew in the end. There's a whole story left about why he had a contract from Yale to publish it in English. He decided that it was better enough to translate it. It's very interesting.
It's
very interesting. And the whole thing. I know highlights.
It's not like the thing you want, but
I don't know. It's interesting. All right. So he has this interesting story about how somebody is accepted as a somebody is accepted that there's a accepted as a rabbi of Amsterdam, and a person that comes along, and what is this person? This person has somehow put out a silver coin with his own image on it. And right, somebody coined his own money.
Very little.
Right. The so-and-so commemorative thing from the Franklin Mint. Right, so his own image on it.
I don't know.
Yeah, this was a...
You could melt it down and then have the lid of the silver. But you can't go to the store and say, I know how much this weighs. But it's a decorative thing. But yeah, also like points.
Okay, so he says, right, he says, when I saw it, I was terrified, like, could the Rav really have allowed this? Because, right, this stuff is this Rav HaKasid, because look, it has a Tavnit Rosh HaTechodeh in Partuf Panim Shalim Bolit. Okay, so it's a full face, full bust picture on a coin. Okay, it's a full head, a frontal head portrait. But then with that scene, it says, it's a gomel muchlat. Whether you do it for yourself, or other people doing it, or other people make it for you, and you're told you can't help but be Israel, how about how it was said? Do you think he understands that Pharaoh is being non-Jews, as most Christians do explicitly? Okay. He said, I think this is both Asr Deraisa because of Lotasun, and Asr Rabban because of Chashad, and he has this cute way of getting out of Rabban, because that's why, even though, of course, the coin is on Rabban, but you're always afraid that people will take these coins and take them right in their pockets, and when no one's looking, they're going to take the coins out and bow down. Yeah, no one's bound down to these coins. Let's be clear, right? Pulling out the Chashad, I don't think the only question is of the person who made the coin bowing down to his own image. There isn't any risk that anybody else is bowing down to these coins, I don't think. Alright.
Well,
the rabbi is a question to be better on, not the person who made the coin. He says that, so this person should not be allowed to have this coin. There's really nobody should be allowed to have these coins because we're afraid anybody who has this coin will sneak him somewhere and bow down to them. I know, right? It's a good thing that Washington's only in profile on the quarter. Washington's on the quarter, right?
Yeah.
I think he's on the penny, right? So you have to go to Washington, you have to go to the penny. So they're all in profile.
Are there people in other countries who are laughing on the currency?
These shadows come all the time. Kings, right? Because all the kings keep on putting their own images on the currency. So can you use money?
I don't understand why
that would
actually affect
you
using currency because...
It's a coin. It's got a full, portrait of it. And that often, right, it'll be in Rome, right? So you'll do bow down to statues of the king all over the place. You have a whole discussion about whether money is a king of Queen Nebuza or a Queen of Kuban. One of people throw money in the street, the other hand, people treat money as really important. Right? The whole interesting discussion about that.
But isn't it sort of like our discussion about art and philosophy, that it's like, well, something's got to give on money, and you
can say, oh,
it's a passion, it's difficult.
So in the end, I'm not aware of any children in the end banned money.
Okay.
It would be interesting if somebody wrote such a journal.
Okay. What happens if we found a cat?
We do. We
have to own it.
They
didn't have
any
profile.
Yeah. Yeah. Big issue. It's about all over the place. They're not aware of any rabbi who ended up banning the use of any existing currency. But that may be that those rabbis didn't get their book published. Or to take the picture. No.
That's the right gold ingot. Yeah, go where they buy the gold ingots first.
And buying.
And panning for gold, being published in Sanford. And gold coins.
Everything
is frozen,
It works, it works. This is why we have... This is why we have credit cards. This is why we have credit cards. Okay. So the first thing he says is, he says the Rush says, he claims that the Rush says that there's never an Easter unless you have the whole body. Head by itself, husband by itself, no difficulties. The guy will always find out, you know, this we still get, you know, like whole body. Like what? Whole body? How much, but we don't want a whole nude body. So how do you know if the person that's chosen or not? They're wearing shoes. Right. This is where he came from. I just the whole...
The only episode into it is...
It's in a place, right?
Well, the whole body. Here. Minus the toe, the other one, the toe's like covered by the...
It's a portrait of...
Whole body, or something like a partial
portrait. Portrait of Rabbi Clapper in sheer.
Yeah.
You paint this.
In my view?
Yeah.
Not the whole body.
Why?
Because I only see from your elbow up.
What about somebody who can see everything of me except for the little band where the center gets, where this part of the center gets in the way? So you can see everything on top or on the bottom.
Do we assume that there's
clarity
behind it, or
do
we assume that there
isn't?
You're just
doing
that for me.
Yeah,
the whole question is just not a good question.
So the whole thing is that there's clarity of the majority, especially of the jar, and that there are feet behind the shoe, or
do you sense
from the
jar? Yes, you're here,
I don't know. All the other guys, you know, let's say it's the story of a, let's imagine, there are people who, who really are missing limbs, and they shouldn't be related to high-fats.
What are your
favorites when
they say the people
who are related to the high-fats? Right, so the whole versus non-whole is defined technically.
Wait, so what's the missing here?
He's an almost full person. He's looking a little bit more. And he's missing one ear. That's exactly a good thing. What if you can see the tip of the ear, but not the rest of it? And what degree of detail is necessary, right? Am I drawing enough to make it sufficient? Right? Even though the Mona Lisa doesn't have eyebrows.
She does.
She doesn't have eyebrows. But, you know, but we can tell they were trees. So there's no way. Right, what happens if you, in fact, draw a picture of a whole person who, right, who only has one leg? Probably not.
It's a whole picture.
Well, you can draw a picture of a person only has down the ear. That's right, but there's a cut off here. People say it's
a diagram. That's
kind of ideal. I have no idea. I just said the whole conversation, I have to say. Your job, all conversation to me, just doesn't work. Right. It just doesn't work. It's not about the right thing.
What should it be about?
It should be about representation. Right. That's what Defender was talking about. It should be about, right, what the image accomplishes.
what is my, an F, right?
Which is much less, right, which is much less subjective than appears to be.
Which is much more subjective, but it's about something real. Right, as opposed to a conversation in which something that a 4-year-old draws is up there. But right, any 18-year-old knows the way around it. Right? This, right?
They have to be idiot proof, right? Because right now, not everybody who's making the rules are the people who have to follow them. And so you need to figure out some way to make it out there.
It's not a serious conversation, that's the problem. It's not a serious conversation. It doesn't talk about, it doesn't help anyone understand what an image is and what the difference is between an image and a real thing.
But it could be that we're not...
Maybe law can't do that.
We're not talking about necessarily what an image is and what an image accomplishes. And actually, right, we're talking about the specifics of human and Bodhisattva, and we have to make, you know, concrete formal limits in order so that people be able to follow them clearly without... Right,
having
putting everything up to, right? We can't
assume
that people are mature critics.
Okay, so maybe this is, you know, this is like the Rosh Hashanah, right? So this is halacha for 5-year-olds. Right, halacha has to be followable by 5-year-olds, so this is halacha, this is built as art for 5-year-olds.
And what about 5-year-olds? The way it gets, right, the way it gets, it gets kind of obvious to be followable by 5-year-olds.
I suppose. So to recognize then that this halakha is not a useful way of talking to people about their work. And if that's the case, then it's not a useful way, then it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant hashkafically.
Maybe it is relevant hashkafically, but this tshuva of Gatavan is not right, speaking to whoever this fellow is on like a sophisticated level about his work, right? It's talking about...
Right, this truly is not, but to this guy, Lakota is just an egocentric.
Right.
At least the way we have to understand that we don't know what he's right, right? Maybe, you know,
there would be a philosophical problem with, right, if there are philosophical problems with, right, depiction and representation that are at issue, it's definitely not the subject here.
Yeah, okay. Yes, Mia.
No, I was going to say that, like, when you do get into trying to legislate much more about what's actually depicted and sort of the context of what's context and like what's subjectively. So it's like, the American form laws are just like you should don't really work. And people are like, oh, well, you don't come when you see it because, you know, the subjective experience, but it just doesn't work in that and everything's supposed to be yes. So we need to ask you, like, it's maybe...
Maybe we don't do it. No, let me just find out if I can continue or not.
Probably. Sorry. Oh, I was going to make a brain.
Ends up coming up all sorts of interesting things now along the way. We're not going to have time obviously to read the whole thing. Right, so the first thing which is always interesting is he says that look, there's Machlokes Rishonim, and he thinks it's the Sanhedrin Rabban Rash Baran and Maharam against the Rush, right? Whether that's really true or not is not our issue right now. And he says, you know what? So look, we should at least say something direct to the Kumra. Certainly a chance of a desire. Okay, now that kind of argument, right, assumes, right, is the argument you kind of make when there's you think that there's nothing to gain by being matir. Right. So you have to decide, right? You have to decide, is this the kind of argument, is this the kind of discussion where you say, you know what, if I hit a standoff among the Rishonim, so I'm just going to pass in Lachumra Mitzvah,
Or do you say, you know what, this is the kind of thing where there's a real value to being Matir also. So, right, it's a Chomer each way, right? It's a Chomer on the artist as opposed to a Chomer on the Lazar, right? So that's the first thing to decide, which I think is very important, as on what areas of halacha you're willing to leave to the mechanical rules of Safek L'Chomra, and what areas you're going to say the categories of Chomer and Kula are mistaken because the consequences on both sides are equal. Okay, right, that's a big issue. Maybe I talked about this a lot this year in the context of brain dead, right? You say, Safek L'Chomra about, right, and therefore you shouldn't do any organs. Because it might be a third, you say, well, you know what, it's true, it should be all right, so one way, but guess what, there's also a chiyah that's also partial the other way. Right, so which way is, right, you don't say something will come around, right, to prevent the yitzhak, but there's also, you're also losing an yitzhak that way, or the other way. Right, if you want to help that way, among other reasons. So you have to decide if this is the kind of issue about which you're willing to say something will come around, or do you think that the cost of ushering things is serious also? So there's no such thing as a pure chumrah. Yeah, okay. Then he goes on to make a claim about human beings, and that then comes up with this radical idea, which I don't know of any Christian halacha in which we've talked about human form and human faces. And he separates and he addresses the question, what happens if you have a faceless mannequin? And what happens if you have a face without a body? Right, so that's already an interesting move. Right, to separate the shape, right, from the face. And he has language for that, which is that the Tzelem Elokim is the upright. Right, that's the whole tradition about that, that what makes human beings is right, that the form of the human body is unique because it's upright. We can decide, you know, kangaroos don't really mess this up. Kangaroos don't really like standing up or anything like that. Standing on all fours, okay. Or grizzlies. But if we ever thought, right, that a certain kind of dinosaur is right, then a really big problem because they like walking on two legs.
They have a lot of
Yeah, listen, they're not out there too.
There
aren't
more to run kangaroos
too? I think what?
There aren't more to move around than
dinosaurs. Yeah, you watch kangaroos move when you go for it.
There are a lot?
Yeah. They can kangaroos move. Didn't you? Yeah. That's the gun, that's the Australian gun, right on Mark Gilboa.
Oh yeah, I never visited there.
That's where I got to see them. The gun, whatever it's called. Ganru, is that what it's called?
I think it was Dan Ganru or something.
That was terrible fun. But yeah, not so distinct from rabbit. Not so distinct from rabbit. Okay. Then we say, right, okay, so we have, right, right, so you have this whole image, right? The Gilufa Hainu Mesutach Shanikar Heitev Surat Apayim Kakuka Karo Yitare Yitare Kitabni Ish Mushlam Kiderach Kol Atere Apayim. Okay. So he has the standards as to what constitutes a detailed portrait. Okay, fine. So we get to the end of the Shulah, right? So let's move to this, right? Let's move to the second page where it says, Viram Zafur Lato, Hachasid Ha'amiti, Abamari Rabbeinu Adero, Halakhi Mihir Bebeinu Lamajim, Wadzei Tehrim, Wadzei Tehrim. You go on for a long time. Right, so here's the... Yeah. So here's this whole maestro, everybody loves his father, but it's a wonderfully ambivalent story. Yeah, father is a Hacham Tzvi. There's a wonderful story where the underlying section, right? The name they wrote Etim Shukatam Kashkula Shir Biadam Sir Telem Blut Tavnito. I got all those phrases. Sir Telem Blut Tavnito. They wanted something to remember him by. Okay, the Khibu Panab is a Varze of Kol Azab Kaludi Temahem Shelotam. But yeah, that's one good. You know the Tiara Mashuach the Sheshar. That's why I know the Sheshar. Right? The Lavashimah. Okay, he refuses refuses to do anything. He refuses even to have a painted portrait, which he thinks most folks can agree is perfectly Mutter. But, certainly pictures of paintings of the face alone are permitted. Nonetheless, they couldn't get him to do it. Nirov Hasiduto, Ukdusha So, Ukrishuto, the Hasidsi is too holy. So first we started the image that, you know what? It's Mutter Lakhon Deyav, but the presumption is it's bad. Alright, this is a phrase. We are not here certain things, but the Chassid will not allow any of this to happen. Right? So all this praise of his father who refuses to allow any kind of image of him to be taken.
Maybe.
But how do you read the ending, right? So the Chassid is a great Chassid, and he refuses to allow under any circumstance, he will not allow them to have any kind of even painting of him. Right? They apparently want some kind of statue, right? But his father wants nothing of it. So they sneak a quick picture of him. Now, also in our Jacobin has been praising his father by talking about his father's Chassidus and Kedusha and all those things he wasn't allowed to happen. But now, there's a new thing, right? He says, what happens is, right, they found Uman Baki Nisla, right, Shapal Yasak Kulpur Patu Parab and Arab and Aur Makaritu the Jesus of Sum Shalom Panav, right, he painted it from memory, right, and the painting is perfect. So his tshuva begins with a loud denunciation of this person who is putting his image out on coin. It goes from there to say, and my father forget coins. My father wouldn't allow anyone even to do a portrait of his face. But they made a portrait of his face. Wow! It was just like the real thing. Everyone makes copies of it. He's not like his voice. Everybody should remember this amazing painting of my father. So what do you do with it?
So I can't help but sort of read the parallel between this and the beginning of the show, right?
Yeah.
We're both talking about, right, people who do it or not, like, have portraits of themselves made and put out. Which makes it seem like actually, really, we're talking more about humility and arrogance than we were talking about necessarily issues of representation and inherent authenticity of representatives. Really, what's bothering him? Right? I think the reason he's not losing any sleep over this guy, right? This is a guy that we started out with, and we're stomping all over his artistic license, is because he thinks this guy is basically acting really inappropriately by self-centeredly putting out a line of coins that has an image all over, and he would think that it's the father is that he didn't. Right, and then he refused to do that and to put up his ego that way. If, you know, by the way, somebody happened to do it, and if you know, then that's great. But the reason we're not, we're not talking about art so much. Art is fine, but it only sort of comes in sort of by the wayside at the end.
Okay, so you can construct a consistent axis in which you recommend in thinks that it's valuable, that it's okay to make pictures of others, but not to allow pictures made of yourself. So all pictures should be made stealthily, because it's too much. Because it's for a portrait of ego.
Not philosophically, but philosophically, right? People shouldn't be making portraits of themselves. Especially if we're out there, this is like an issue of Avatara, and that's really what's very much at stake is, right? The worship of something or the king who has been just like other than God, then making portraits of yourself is going to be the sort of exact opposite of that fact, that you're...
Okay, right, so I think that's a really interesting notion that the first audience, so to speak, of all copies is yourself. And so one of the ways of thinking about those are is what do you think about copies? Right, what do you think about copies of yourself, as the images? And I think that in the end it sounds like he understands his father as having a first commandment issue, or a second commandment issue, right? The impossible feature of a post-game. But I agree with you that if you look at the axis, it sounds like that's what's going on. But the really interesting thing is, why is he not bothered?
why is he not bothered by people essentially worshiping an image of his father? That's really, because like, the way he describes his image, right, it's a perfect copy. It's just like, if your book thing is that the reason artists can't make, we don't want to draw pictures is because, let's say, because God is the only perfect craftsman, and so it's eclipsed to the belief that you can make anything as good as God, as well as God did. And here we have no picture, just as
when it's... Well, I would say that the flip side is that you're being creative, and that's the flip side is that you're enshrining yourself by creating...
Feeling is only about yourself. So that Brandon doesn't care that this artist has made something as powerful as God's original. Right? You don't need the Chasam Tzvi there. Anybody looking at that knows exactly what the Chasam Tzvi is. I read this down the church. Right? Also, I read this, you know, now, again... I imagine that many of you reading this are, you know, are, have all of you read the picture of Dorian Gray? Do you all have a thought of the picture of Dorian Gray? Dorian Gray is this young man who has a perfect portrait painted of him. And as he's told, you know, as this virtuous young man slowly turns into a life of dissipation, the sins show up on the portrait instead of on him. So he still looks innocent, but his portrait ages. Because essentially he has, it's a Horcrux, you know. But it's a peculiar kind of Horcrux, right, where aging, my friend of the Akhazan game suggested that according to some Midrashim, that's the Beit HaMikdash is for us. Right, all the sins build up within Midrash, and then, instead of an us, and then God can destroy the Midrash, right, and we're still fine. But the picture of Dorian Gray with the painting is destroyed, all the sins come back onto him. Because there's nothing there. But that, you know, that's sort of a frightening image of, you know, the word paintings disassociate you from yourself. And I have to say, I have...
When you get here, it was like the Shriner.
The what?
The Shriner.
The Shriner.
Yes.
Yes, I mean, you didn't just have mirrors at all, right? If you look at it, why mirrors I'm looking at? There is a full face, or full, right, because I have an artwork, as opposed to an artwork which says, stand here. And it's not a few minutes from the end of the race, that is something, it's just because, that is, you know, a lot of my artwork goes out there. Right, or about projections in some way.
So I have to say, this, you know, this is part of my difficulty with portraits of Holy Rebbe, that I find it scary to turn a relationship with a human being into a relationship with an image. But here I'll get to it. So one of my favorite words, in a sense, which I was preceded in by Aaron Joshua Heschel, though I didn't come up with a pseudonym, is that the real Yisrael of Avodah Zarah is not, one kind of Yisrael of Avodah Zarah is not the making of a tzelem, it's the replacement of the only tzelem. There's only one tzelem looking at a human being. To believe that you can have an image of God other than the human being is a violation of Avodah Zarah. And to believe that human beings can produce the talent in some fashion other than reproduction. Right? Without God as intermediaries of Avodah Zarah. So that notion makes me tremendously suspicious of images. On the other hand, I think an honest reading of the Tzur HaKadosh tells you that this is about as amazing an encomium to the power of art as you could write without suspicion, and you could have. Right, look, isn't it amazing? Everybody, right? The incredible visage of the Chasam Tzvi, right, was copied, and this should be a memorial of all generations, right? That there was this painting that was so, had so impressed people. So that kind of, to me, what's most interesting about, there's a lot of the arguments are interesting in itself, but, you know, and his separation of the face from the form becomes very important for contemporary Jehovah the Vatican. But what interests me most of our afternoon is the tension between, on the one hand, his father, who is, you know, who really seems to think that the way he portrays him, that allowing any kind of image, especially of a human being, is a tremendous concession. And there are things we want after, but if we had our way, there would be no images at all. So if we can't ask anything, you can't ask everything. Right? And then his own appreciation of the portrait, which is, wow, if this portrait never existed, the world would be a much poorer place. So that, right, so that,
But he has no halakhic arguments that way, right? He doesn't make any halakhic arguments. That's when he doesn't make any halakhic arguments. Just deal with Mutter, and now look how incredible it was. So now how do you frame that? How do you frame that to, if a, right, how do you read this tshuva with a portrait painter? Sir Joshua Bell, I think, was a great portrait painter of Victorian England. Let's suppose you have a 17-year-old Sir Joshua Reynolds. And when they come to you and they say, I'm a halachic Jew, and my ambition is to be a portrait painter, but I want to live in the quarters of Ruach HaTorah. So what is it that you say to them? I want to paint my portrait, you know, I want to feel that I'm living, I don't want to feel like I'm living a Binyamin's life, or a Bachar Jumuto's world, Bachar Shkuto's life, right, where he started getting into my Sahara. I want everything I do, right, to be in accordance with the highest standards. So what kind of language can you use, right, to talk about halachot and portraiture? It might be you just tell them, right, again, you know, leave out the eyebrows. But I don't think that's enough. Don't make sculptures. You know, there are things, but I think that's, I'll give you a metaphor, which has always deeply disturbed me. Maybe it's interesting this way. There were various some academics who have told me, I think it's more than one who told me a story like this about themselves, that when they were young, as I used to be, people that are young like me, but they tell the story about changing. very young as I used to be. When they told me the story, I was young, and they said, I was young like you. They were really attracted by university Jewish studies. But they understood that the function of university Jewish studies, and they also loved studying Tanakh. But they understood that to function as an academic in Tanakh, in university, meant that you had to function as a biblical critic, as a documentary hypothesis. And so they went to the late Professor Troitsky at Harvard, and they said, what do we do if we're from? And we really like being academic, and essentially, it's not just that we enjoy it, it's that we feel fulfilled by academic research. And the answer they told me he gave them was that as an academic, you have to always write the truth as it appears to be academically. You cannot draw a division and say, I'm writing as a from academic, but this is what the academic answer is. Because I'm from, I guess I did that. As an academic, you have to write the academic truth, but you can choose which field to study. And so that's why there are a whole lot of from Jewish historians. Because that, right, on the medieval period, because they didn't have to deal with the theological issues of the conflict between academic and theological truth. So that has never been a work for them, still works for them, but it's never been a satisfying answer for me. And I think, having this conversation with you, it makes it clear to some degree, because they have an image of what they want to be, and what they want to be as an academic. And essentially says that they can't be who they want to be in all their life. Right? So they agree to be something in one afterlife, so they never have to do anything dishonest, and they never have to believe anything that, right, they're not to violate their integrity anyway. They don't have to violate their religious integrity because they never believe anything that they think is left. They don't have to violate their academic integrity because they never write anything that doesn't follow the canons of the field. So they never get to be who they want to be. Could be. Could be. I like to be who I am, right? I like to be who I am everywhere.
Most people don't have the opportunity.
Right. This is a self-limit. This is a self-limit. I don't know if that, you know, so I think that this is, I think that if you come with artificial limitations like that, where artists will always sort of say that, so I'm an artist, and I really believe in what art is up to here. And all of a sudden I stop and I say, oh, now I'm from Britain, right? So all of a sudden, right, you can get by. Right? We can tell people, don't be a portrait painter, be a landscape painter, don't be a sculptor, right? don't be a sculptor, be a, right? be a painter, paint butts and not really not full figure portraits. And maybe you know, if you're a talent of the world, so it's not bad, right? So you know, we just had a new version of it. There's the Ishamadu and Ishamuna, right? They're constantly in conflict. That's fine. But I tend, much as I'm attracted by that in some sense, I tend to think that there's also a real value in integrated life as well. And so I'm not sure that works. At the same time, I think that Rakhendra is a good way of illustrating. If you wanted to write that kind of tension, Rakhendra is a really good way of doing it. Because look, in the land, wow, Rakhendra doesn't like this. And wow, that was really awesome. And you can find a way. The other way of living it. The other way of living it is Rav Kukerman, the founder of Nicola. Has a wonderful essay on Avera Lishma, in which he argues that the purpose of all narratives in Tanakh is to contradict the law. As opposed to people who try to find ways that the narrative conforms to the law, the narrative confirms the law comes through it. He thinks that all important stories in Tanakh are there to show you that sometimes you have to break the law. So you can have that frame, right, where the power of art comes from that, right, from the need to have an agadic sensibility as opposed to a halachic sensibility, which I think of a verbal argument it comes to speak to you in a week. Right, you can talk about conflicting sensibilities, and then you have to constrain all of them. Say, you know what, halacha is one way of life, and sometimes there are things that require you at least to live with a sensibility opposed to it, even if you don't break the law per se. I'd rather not give that answer either. But I think you also scare enough energy about it and say, you know, look, it was just mutter is against halachic sensibilities. But wow, it was awesome. Maybe part of the reason it was awesome was that, you know, it was the thrill. That, you know, that if it hadn't been awesome, it would have been really bad. All right, we'll leave you with that, and we'll go back to the figure.